Live to see it, friends, and welcome to The World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At The World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
Man, I'm doing great. Doing great. Got to Friday, right?
So yeah, well, we took the shortcut, right? We went from Wednesday to Friday, so it was, stopped off on Thursday. But this has been a fun week. What we get a feel for when we do a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday week is what it would be like if we were on every night, right?
Yeah.
It'd be hard. That's what I think.
I think with 3 30-minute shows, we're doing about the best we can do for a couple of guys with families and jobs. You know what I mean?
Yeah. For now, until they start paying us to do this. Right?
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
And who knows? Maybe one day our families will pay us to do this. We'll kill two birds. But I'm just thinking outside the box. I'm just freeforming here. Anyway, 3D shows is what you get, folks. If you want more, pay us money. Okay, there. I don't know how else to say it.
Or just explore the archives. There's plenty there.
Yeah, that's right. You can listen to 20 shows a day if you want to. You can do that for 25 days plus. Okay. So
yeah.
All right, so I called tonight's show's Future Values, How Technology Can Help Us Become Better People, because I thought that was a good way of saying what I want to say, and really one spin on the show, one take on this show might be, get off my lawn. You kids, get off my lawn. things aren't as good as they were when I was young, okay? That's kind of where some of this is going, because really these future values are some... some old-fashioned values, at least to some extent. Some are new. Some are good.
When I was a kid, Phil, the grass was greener on both sides of the fence.
That's exactly right. That's right.
All kids were above average too. So
they were. You remember the Dana Carvey grumpy old man character?
Yeah.
I like things the way they were compared to the way they are now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That informs this to a small extent, but ultimately we're talking about the future, and I think we're actually talking about bringing some good stuff from the past and uniting it with what technology allows us to do to make us better. So this is kind of touchy feeling.
Well, I just want to add, I heard that Dana Carvey just turned 60. Playing that character is getting easier and easier for him. I'm sure
it is. No doubt.
Anyway, happy birthday, Dana Carvey.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy birthday. I hope he does a grumpy old man movie. I'd love to see that. So that would be that would be a lot of fun, or a series even. Okay. So anyway, so basically, I'm just going to throw out some values that I think that I think we need. These are ways we can improve ourselves. These are ways we can improve society, and they interact with or touch on technology somehow or other. Okay, it's kind of a loose description for a show, but we've done looser. Okay, here you go. The first one is rediscovering the value of old. And, this is from a list of ideas I wrote down a while back. I was pretty fired up about this at the time because I was writing a regular blog about the employment market and was spending a lot of time looking at issues related to ageism and just kind of a real turn, it feels like, that our culture has made against older folks. And I don't know that it actually has. It could be that we've always disrespected the elderly, and I'm just on the wrong side of it now. But I'm not sure that's the case. I think that there has been a very, because there used to be the kid world and the grown-up world. And now it's like the kid world and the grown-up world are pretty much the same thing. And then the old world has kind of been pushed off to one side. the
And there also used to be a a rich person's world and a poor person's world, and
right.
Nowadays a billionaire is going to be wearing grunge clothing and hanging out at the coffee shop in Seattle.
Right.
I mean,
right.
So the distinctions, the old distinctions have passed away. But I think there is some ageism, particularly in high tech fields.
You see it really bad in Silicon Valley. I mean, Mark Zuckerberg a few years ago when he said we're going to hire young people because they're smarter. I mean, that's pretty flagrant stuff right there.
That's right. Substitute age for race or religion or anything, and he would have been excoriated, right? I mean,
right. As it was, he was mildly excoriated, but I think he should have gotten a lot worse than he did. The great thing is he's going to get old too, and then he'll have a great opportunity to reconsider some of those. But I mean, I've encountered that too with companies that they boast about it on their websites. We're a young company, and I've always said, well, add any other demographic in there and see if it fits, right? We're a white company, We're a heterosexual company, We see ourselves as a very male company.
We're a 2% body fat company.
exactly. You would never ever say those things. And the truth is that both youth and experience have so much going for them. They're both great things to have, And being in the middle is cool too. There's a lot of value in every stage of life. The idea that that different stages need to be at odds with each other is kind of this relic from, my generation has a lot to do with it, and when I say my generation, I mean particularly the older members of it, because they sort of started this whole generational awareness thing and don't trust anybody over 30 and a lot of that kind of stuff, and now they're the old guard, and everybody hates them, or I should say everybody hates us because I'm one of them. But it hasn't helped anything much, It doesn't make us a better functioning society. It doesn't make us get along better. It doesn't make us understand each other any better. And, I think the whole thing of dividing us up by age is just, the notion has been played. It's played out. And I think we really need to go the other way. We need to start kind of reuniting around the fact that we're different ages. That's where I really think this needs to go.
Well, as we age and gain experience, that experience is, it's very useful to be able to see a situation and be able to, within our minds, argue by analogy. This is like that situation way back 30 years ago when this happened and that happened. We can avoid, allowing that to happen again if we just do try it this way this time. You have that experience to avoid pitfalls and maybe and also have take opportunities that you wouldn't have otherwise. But you also build up over many years a legacy that fresh eyes on a problem and that doesn't have the same legacy. A legacy can be. It can be like iron bars. It can keep us from being able to see things in a new way. That's why you need to have the young guys around you too, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you got to have both. You got to have both perspectives. You got to have the people who recognize the pattern, and you got to have the people who can break the pattern. And it's hard to do both.
I would submit you simply can't do it inside of one skull. You got to have multiple people. With a varying age ranges to be able to solve a problem right, otherwise you just you get a bunch of old guys together, they're going to come up with an old solution, and if you get a bunch of young guys together, then they have no benefit of experience, I think there's strength in a mixture.
Exactly.
Zuckerberg should know that. Zuckerberg should be, become aware of that. Give him a little more experience, and he will.
he will. He's aging well. Okay. Let me say that about Mark Zuckerberg. We've talked very well about him. in recent months.
Yeah.
His initiative that he and his wife are taking on about solving all diseases. Can't say enough good things about that. So, as long as he keeps making headlines around stuff like that, the feud is over. Okay, I'm sure it's a tremendous relief to Mark Zuckerberg that I'm not going to be okay. I'm not going to be on him like I used to be. But the thing I said earlier, it really holds up. We're all going to be old, right? That's the thing. And assuming that that we do get good at expanding human lifespan, I mean it quite literally, most of the population is going to be old. We're not just going to be where, you know, this weird, oh, it's like 60% of the people are old. It's going to be like 95% of the people are going to be old. And at that point, we're going to have this whole new value that we're going to have to rediscover, which is novelty. We're going to have to, as we get older, keep trying new things. And that sounds easy to do, but everybody hits a comfort zone, no matter what, no matter what you're doing or how, you know, diverse a life that you're living. Even the most interesting man in the world from the Dos Equis commercials, that guy has a comfort zone that he's probably, well, okay, not him, but most of us have this, we have this comfort zone that we tend to stay in, and we kind of flatline. If we're going to live a long time, we've got to actually keep refreshing, don't we?
Yeah. And I think the best way to do that is to, make it part of your personal program to try new things, on a regular basis. It's put it this way. I have a family member who, learned very well a word processor, which was WordPerfect 5.1. Okay. That was a DOS based word processor, and he just gave it up. I kid you not, Phil. He just gave it up like a year and a half ago. It was only because he simply couldn't. It was becoming difficult to find a computer that could run it. I mean, it's just he'd have to get in Windows and start DOSBox and then start from inside that. And I mean, it was silly. It had become silly, and it was something that was funny to those of us who knew him. But I mean, I just know it so well. I can just hit this function key, and it does the same thing as that your mouse can do. And I can breeze through this because it's second nature to me. Well, but there were better ways to do things, and you gotta break out and try new things on a regular basis so that you don't get left completely behind. And that's in an aging population, that's gonna be part of the secret.
But
relevant,
Your relative is not alone. Have you heard how George R. R. Martin writes the Game of Thrones books?
Does he still use a typewriter? Is that
he uses WordStar.
Oh my gosh, that's even older than WordPerfect 5.1.
Yeah,
WordStar was like mid-80s, right? Or even earlier.
Yeah. He uses WordStar 4.0, and he has an engineer full-time who maintains the system so he can sit down and write. Because, back in the mid-80s, that's when he really came on. He was short fiction, science fiction. He was doing the Wild Cards books. That's when I first encountered George R. R. Martin. And, he was cutting edge, right? Well,
yeah.
He got used to cranking on that, and he hasn't gotten out of that habit. So,
Stephen King was given a word processor in the mid '80s. Okay, and he said, "Okay, well, I'll try it out." He had a practice of typing out 7 pages a day. That's what he did every day. He produced 7 pages,
right?
And and it might not be the 7. Every bit of what was on those 7 pages ended up in the final book, but he produced 7 pages daily. That's what he
right.
did.
Right.
And he said with a word processor, it was like being on a treadmill. He didn't know when to stop. And it was like, he'd look up and it would be like he had worked 16 hours or something crazy and be completely exhausted and would drive, and it was driving his family crazy. He went back to the work of typewriter for years. I think what he finally did is that when he finally adopted a word processor, he got some engineer or somebody to do something where when he finished typing out a page, he would print it out immediately. So he had that physical page in hand that, you know, so he could do seven pages, you know, and produce and there's, I don't know, whatever it takes, you know, to be able to use a word processor. It's just so much better than typing. You cannot compose.
Well, there you go. I mean, these are all great examples of stuff you got to get over.
I'm sorry, we're chasing rabbits here.
you got to get past it. I mean, that's the bottom line. I mean, but the thing is, actually, you can be tied to an old technology, but still be excited about life, still be thinking new thoughts, still be, trying out new things. Ultimately, we've got to, I think, put more emphasis on novelty, just because it will take greater effort. We won't see it sneaking up on us. Our desire just to kind of, you know, get into a groove and keep doing the same things, but it will definitely be a major factor for how society progresses, I think, in the coming years as people get older and older and older. And another one that's closely related, although it doesn't sound like it would be, is empathy. If PJ were here, I'm sure she would have said that should have been my first item, but I did get to it eventually. So if you're listening, Patricia, reinforcing empathy. This is important because technology has helped to make it easy not to empathize with people, right? It's made it easy to interact with people without necessarily empathizing. You know, the other day we were talking about how hard it can be to get rid of people in your social networks and so forth. That's more probably out of a social embarrassment or, you know, wanting to avoid trouble than it is having a lot of empathy for those people. But one of the things we've seen over the years is that technology makes people really nasty towards each other. I won't say it makes them nasty. It allows them to be nasty towards each other, doesn't it?
Right. You'll say things on a Facebook post that to someone that you may never would say to them, you know, over Thanksgiving dinner, right? I mean, it's and people can really get ugly with one another because they feel insulated by
right.
that. Well, you know, and I guess, you know, in this idea of old and new mixed together in a workplace that you have, you know, the young guys and the old guys and they're working together and ladies, let me say that. I mean, you got people of all sorts, all ages and backgrounds working together. You know, that's when you really exercise empathy. If everybody's exactly like me, I don't have to be empathetic, do I? I mean,
right. Not as much. You know, it's pretty easy.
I mean, everybody looks like me. Everybody acts like me. Everybody thinks basically the same thoughts I think. I don't have to empathize. I can, you know, we're all the same. It's only when there's somebody different that I have to step out of myself a little bit and try to walk around in their shoes a little bit. Say, so, you know what, here's where they're coming from and why they're thinking what they're thinking. And okay, maybe they've got a point. And that's when we really exercise empathy, is when we're with people that are a little bit different from us. And
exactly. And you know, the great thing about technology is it lets us have those people in our lives so much easier. But we got to bring the empathy with us when we're, when we're interacting with them. And I think this is something that it doesn't sound like an app can fix, but it could actually help with. People are doing all of this quantified self, you know, self-hacking, tracking their stuff. I currently write down everything I eat in the MyFitnessPal app. This is something I'm doing under my doctor's recommendation, you know, just working on weight loss and some of those kinds of things. It's not something I ever really got in the habit of doing before, but now I'm pretty good about it. And everything I eat goes into this app, and I really start to understand my behavior in a way that I didn't before, because I'm writing it all down. And so, you know, just the presence of the app actually gives me the opportunity to be aware of and adjust my behavior that I wouldn't have had before. So, you know, it's possible that we might use apps, you know, for the previous value I was talking about, novelty, and for empathy, that we might get a little boost from our smartphones or whatever digital devices we're going to be carrying with us in the near future, or whatever, you know, Jarvis-like assistants are going to be helping us out to remind us to try new things, you know, to remind us to be nice to other people, to try to see the world from their perspective. I think technology can actually help us quite a bit with...
Think about a world that's, where Uber has conquered the world, okay? Uber and Uber-like interfaces have conquered the world, and that's, you know, that's how people are of service to one another is, you know, I mean, we just, you know, we have apps that, you know, okay, I've got 30 extra minutes and I've got access to a vehicle. Does anyone need anything delivered? You know, oh, of course,
right.
Yes, you know, you know, it will allow us to connect in ways to, you know, to do things for one another and to be of service to one another. I think there's opportunities to be better people. You know, that, and I mean, even imagine a situation where, you know, we are in a situation where we feel like, you know what, I could have handled that better. What if you could go back and basically replay that and do like a simulation of what may have happened had you handled it a little differently? I mean, we could learn. Wouldn't that be a valuable tool in learning from our errors, or maybe
Absolutely.
Avoiding errors in the future? Things like that. So yeah, I think there's lots of opportunities to be better people and to empathize better. With technology that we have now and coming technology. Yeah.
Well, and I think one of the ways we can really improve ourselves, ironically, is by the numbers. And so another value that I see coming on strong is this kind of numbers-driven approach to life, which again goes back to the whole quantified self. But one of the things I see people doing, and I see there being a big market for in the near future, is for there just to be a benchmark for everything. You can probably Google just about anything you want to know, but you know, people want to know that they're doing okay or whether they're doing okay. You know, I've done searches, you know, lately about, well, how high should my blood pressure be? You know, a guy my age, my height, my weight,
right.
my kind of thing. But people want to know everything, right? You know, if I'm 25 years old, how long would it take me to lose? Should it take me to lose 15 pounds, right? You know, if I'm 37 years old and I weigh this much, how many push-ups should I be able to do? But not just exercise and health stuff, though. You know, I'm 27 years old guy. How many romantic partners has somebody my age usually had, right? Just people want to know how they're. Kind of how they're ranking, how they're stacking up. Not that we all need to be average, right? Because there's a lot to be said for being exceptional in a lot of different areas. But I think people want increasingly for there to be a quantitative aspect to how they're measuring their success in life, and technology definitely makes that possible. You know, getting back
well,
to your,
you don't want to be average, but you also don't want to, like, you know, go off the deep end in some particular aspect of your life, you know.
You don't want to be a freak.
I mean, you could, you could have what some might refer to as an adventurous love life, and then, you know, if you take it a little further,
you're just a hound.
At that point, you are something to be avoided at all costs by your potential romantic partner. So perhaps an app could kind of alert you that you're getting into hound territory. You know, I mean, who knows?
Yeah,
that's pretty alarming.
Well, I love the idea of apps just, you know, giving us this opportunity to help other people, you know, you know, to take somebody to something, somebody needs a question answered, just whatever it is. to give them that kind of help. And my final app is the idea for random social encouragement, that there be some kind of organized effort around people just telling each other that they're going to be okay, you know, that they can make it. Because I think what we have is we have kind of a background noise that tends to be discouraging to people. You know, it's not set up to be that way, but it just kind of works out that way, that people don't actively encourage each other, but there's always information to be found. There's always something to be seen out there that could push you in the other direction. If there's just a slightly organized effort for people to give each other positive strokes, you know, not to just blow smoke, but to actually make them feel like there's good reasons to think that they are on the right track and that they can turn things around and that, you know, that they can push their lives in a positive direction.
You know, there is an interesting app, and I wish I knew if our listeners are interested, I'm sure you could find it by way of Google, because I sure don't know the name, but it is an app that's, you know, it's a wake up call. You put into the app what time you want to be awakened. And instead of getting this, you know, an alarm, somebody, yeah, somewhere, you know, if you're, you know, one that wants to make the wake up calls, you say, okay, this person wants to be woken up now, and you just press a button on your computer and you call them, hey, sleepyhead, wake up. And they said that what was kind of cool about it, at least in the NPR story, I think it was on NPR that I was listening, they said that how much more personal that is, and how, right, you know, and that you'd think, well, wouldn't you end up with some jerk, you know, occasionally just, you know, being a jerk on those services. And they said, well, we kind of are able to weed that out. And, you know, because there's a scorekeeping thing, you know, if someone's ugly and are just not doing it right, they get a poor score and they're not eligible after enough of that. But if, you know, instead it becomes this thing of, you know, like you say, encouragement or whatever, that, and people are able to connect, even if just very briefly, with an actual human being, you know. And, I think there's lots of opportunities for things like that. I think that's cool.
It can make an unbelievably big difference to somebody to have a little bit of human contact. That actually reminds me. That's a great story, Stephen. The wake up call reminds me of one of my first trips to, I guess I was in Russia or somewhere in Eastern Europe, and it was just this very long, long, long trip. And every night I would call down to the front desk at this hotel I was staying at and ask for a wake up call. And whoever it was, male or female, somebody who took the call, you know, they'd write down the time, and then they would say, all right, we've got it. Good night. And it was like somebody said good night to me. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, I'm about to go to sleep, and somebody actually said good night to me, which, you know, in the grand scheme of things, is not a big deal. But it felt nice that somebody said good night to me.
Yeah, an actual human being. And you know, when you're in a place that's kind of remote, like you were, that's extra important, isn't it? So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, it was just this one tiny little nice detail at the at the end of what was often a very difficult, trying, challenging day. And those things can really add up, and they can really make a difference. So I guess, you know, the ultimate value is seeing all the good in these little things that that add up and really give us the opportunity to make our lives better, make each other's lives better, I think is kind of the thing we're going for. And with that, we've made it, Stephen. We did a Wednesday show, we did a Thursday show, and here it is Friday, and it's Other Geek time.
Other Geek. It's time for Other Geek. Well, I thought I'd continue basically what we were talking about in the show while Other Geeking at the same time. Have you seen it's a new comedy, I believe it's on CBS, called The Great Indoors?
No, I have not.
I encourage you, check that out. It is about a guy that has spent his, you know, life being an adventurer. Okay.
Right.
And he's in his, you know, mid to late 40s. So, you know, not a terribly old guy by any means, right? but certainly older than the people he ends up working with. Okay, he goes to one of these "we're a young company" kind of places, right?
Right.
And it's all and it's a bunch of bloggers and things like that. And they're blogging about just all kinds of things. He brings his experience as this great adventurer. And they're in some ways they idolize him, but in other ways they're like scared of him. He's just he's always saying the wrong thing because he's not savvy to the way they do things, and making one of these 20 something bloggers cry. He ends up back in counseling. He's constantly in some sort of training to keep from upsetting the 20 year olds. But it's a funny comedy, but it also I think it shows the value of the older guy and the newer folks too, and what each brings to the table at the same time. But it's just outright funny as well.
There you go. See, so if you want to learn more about what we've been talking about tonight, watch a TV show. See, that's a geek, right?
The Great
there,
Indoors.
Bygone.
Yeah.
And in fact, I can add a couple more to. Items that we've discussed earlier this week. Well, I'd mentioned it's not a TV show, but the Ted Chiang short story, The Tower of Babylon. I highly recommend that to anyone who's interested in our 10 mile high skyscraper story from Wednesday. And also check out those old, Star Trek, the original series episodes. All of them are great for, any futuristic thinking that you want to do. But if you're thinking about Reality 2.0, check out The Menagerie. Season 1 episode was actually a recut of the Cage, the original pilot for Star Trek. Give it a look and
Which do you prefer, the original the Cage or the Menagerie parts 1 and 2? Which do you prefer?
That's a great question. I like them both. Probably the Cage is a little tighter, right?
It's a single episode instead of two, right?
Yeah.
And
but I don't know, the Menagerie gives you that it changes the ending of the Cage, right? Because in the Cage we see, these are spoilers, folks, I'm sorry, but in the Cage we see Weena walking away with what must be a virtual version of Captain Pike, right? Because he's going back to be captain of the Enterprise. And at the end of the Menagerie we see Weena and Captain Pike going off together because they're both now living in Reality 2.0. I guess that's a little bit more poignant of an ending, isn't it? Maybe.
Yeah. It's and completely that the ending has a completely different effect on the viewer. So yeah, watch both.
Yeah. They're both absolutely worth checking out, and you learn a little something about reality and Reality 2.0. And with that, Stephen, I think we've logged another week. Congratulations to us both. And we're gonna come back and do it again next week. So great talking with you. Great being with you all. We look forward to being with you again next week. And until next time, live to see it.